Welcome to another episode of the Cambridge Endurance Sports Podcast. Today I'm talking to the man with the van, hence this King Kurt song to introduce the podcast. It's Tom Vickery, really talented guy, amazing runner, amazing triathlete, and a real sense of fun comes through in everything he talks about today. Really great chat. Whether you're a triathlete, runner, or just interested in endurance sport in general and have a sense of adventure, listen to Tom. Loads of great stuff in here. Enjoy. Right, well, at last, I'm here with Tom Vickery. I've wanted him on the show for a very long time. Tom's a multi-talented athlete. I'm going to ask him, first of all, how old he is now.
Too old now, it seems. No, 36. Although my birthday is this weekend, and I'm treating myself to my lovely present of a 100-mile run for my birthday.
We shall get onto that very shortly. So, as you can hear there, he's a runner, but he's also a triathlete, cyclist, and just generally talented person. I have to say, first time I ran with him, I thought, this guy's lucky. He's got natural agility and speed and all the rest of it. And in fact, then you later told me that your parents were from a sporting background. Is that correct?
Yeah. I suppose that the lucky in a way that my dad played rugby for England and was a weightlifter for England. So he doesn't look that much like me in terms of stature. He's a lot more muscular. But my mum was national cross country champion. So I was always able to run as a kid. I just had I could do the county champs of the school without really doing any training. I could be the fastest in Botcham without doing any training. And running just came quite naturally. I didn't really get training until a bit later, really. But
it shows. And so you mentioned Botcham there. That's where you went to school. Yeah. And you grew up in the village of Lode, is that correct?
Lode and Botcham, yeah. I just flicked between those two villages, but yeah, just on the outskirts of Cambridge.
So you went to primary school in...
Primary school, Botcham.
Oh, right.
And secondary school, Botcham, and then at Hills Road for sixth form. And then, used to cycle into town from Botcham. That would be my early cycling training.
But you got into trial duathlon quite early, didn't you? Because I remember in 1999 being in Austria and hearing from the Pecks, who also lived in Lode, and one of whom we've had on the show before, and they first told me about you and how you were this young upstart who was beating everybody. So that was 99. So how old would you have been then?
So that would have been, I'm not 86 born. So
you're only 13-ish then. So you started then.
I can't remember. I think that would have maybe just been local things. And mum and dad would just throw me in a race and I did okay. The Pecks actually lived next door to Dave Peck.
Really?
Yeah. So he was great. Amazing character. I didn't feel like my first proper triathlon, maybe I did a triathlon, was probably university. So that would have been, 18, 19, where I had a girlfriend that was a GB swimmer. Right. And she was a fantastic swimmer, and I had sort of running, and I got well into cycling then. I read Lance Armstrong's book. I'm like, oh, this guy's really clean and he's brilliant. Yeah. I thought that inspired me. Got into cycling. I started riding my dad's and all his old mates from Botcham, and I started getting stronger and stronger on the bike until I could I could drop them, I could beat them. And then this girlfriend, we're like, well, let's do a sport where we can go along, from your swimming background. And I like running and cycling, and it's sort of,
You've done some swimming before, actually.
Not really.
No?
I went to the Botcham Swimming Club, like, once or twice, and I was like, I didn't really find it that enjoyable, so I hadn't done that much swimming. But then I got into it, after this race, I think I came, it was over Bedford. There used to be a little series in Bedford.
Yes, yeah.
Just like local sprint race, I came fourth.
Was that with a pool swim, or...?
I used to run the snake. In fact, I remember doing it before with Mark Matthews, and we had a classic showdown. You've had Mark on this podcast. We had a showdown one year at this race where they run the snake, and basically they run it off your predicted swim time. So everyone, Mark would put his predicted swim time down as like the world records and make sure he goes right at the back. And it was one of those days where it was just grim. Like, it was hail, and so I decided I need arm warmers, and the arm warmers were the difference. Basically, I put my arm warmers on, he disappeared, never saw him again. But that was a great little series it used to be. So after I did that, then I really got into the swimming a bit more.
But you say, as with your family background and with the fact that you were winning
little cross countries and things quite
yeah
without that much effort, were you always aware that you could be pretty good if you put your mind to it? When do you think that actually dawned? Because as a kid, you don't really think like that.
No, you don't. I think I enjoyed the competitiveness.
Mm.
I liked the racing, but I didn't really like the training early on.
Mm.
And then that, but that only takes you so far. So you do quite well. You make the county team and bits and bobs of that. But then you go to nationals and you get found out. And you get like, oh, and then you get like, you get
the Brownies coming along and you get beat you by 5 minutes. Yeah.
And I don't think I really learned how to train a bit more, push myself until like university and I just studied sports science and I got a bit more disciplined and learned a bit more to how to, you know, make myself faster.
And what were you aiming for at that point then? When you first got competitive, what was your?
I think it was triathlon straight away that made me want that sucked me in a bit more, sucked me in a bit deeper. I mean, running was always my strength. But I think I started to love the cycling aspect and triathlon a bit more.
Fantastic. And were you a member of a club at uni or anything like that, or were you just still doing
it? So I was C&C as a youngster. So I sort of trained with people like Will Clark and a few other people at C&C.
He must be similar age actually. Is he a couple of years older than me?
So I trained at C&C as a youngster, and then at university, it was just part of the university club, really.
Mm.
But then off that, I came back and got involved with Cambridge Triathlon, really.
Yes.
I wasn't a Cambridge Triathlon before university, no. I wasn't a swim kid.
No. And so in the early days of triathlon, were you mainly sticking to short distances?
Yeah, I suppose it'd be all the local and duathlon was my real strength because you remove the swimming. Like
that, yeah,
I mean that I did quite well at duathlon. I went to like a race, the elite duathlon. In fact, one year I was on to win. They used to have the national series, which was all these. There was about five or six key big races: Clumber Park, Ashbourne. I should remember.
Bottisham used to be one. Yeah.
And I think they put it together rankings, and it was like that you could have the series win. And one year I was about to win it until I got disqualified in the last race for outside interference. And the outside interference was, I thought it was a really hilly race in Ashbourne.
I've done that one.
I thought, do you know what? I'm going to save weight. I'm not going to take a bottle on the bike. I'll just have a bottle in transition. So I got off the bike in second or third. I got my bottle, necked it in transition. As I'm running at a transition with my bottle, I throw it over the railings to my mum. And the referee called it outside interference and outright disqualified me from the race. Sure. Lost me the national series, And I was pretty naive to that. I didn't realise there was any sort of... I mean, had I just ran around the corner and thrown it in a bush and never to be, you know, it would have been fine.
That must have been gutting. Still, I suppose you knew.
Yeah.
You knew you'd done it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had that.
And so as a duathlon, I raced national. I think I might have had a top 10 at national elite duathlon. I remember racing the Brownlees and him basically being a lap ahead of me on the bike. That's about as close as I got to him, I think.
is this probably talking about like 2010 sort of time?
I think, to 8, 9, 10.
I think you sort of got really good when I started getting a lot worse, probably. Fantastic.
Well, I suppose, yeah, it's those days as well back in Cambridge, you sort of think like, I felt like I was one of the strongest runners in the area. There's probably like yourself and bits and like you compare that to what's happened now, it's like the area has progressed so much in running.
We always had our heroes here, but the amount of people who are good cyclists in this area now is crazy.
It's gone mad, really.
Let's talk a bit about that then. Before we get on to the running then, your cycling journey, because I know you've gone from doing things like the duathlons to doing alpine climbs you've really enjoyed, haven't you? Done some Ironman triathlons and everything, and you've worked in bike shops, so you know a lot about your bike. So what have you enjoyed most about cycling, and would you say it's still your biggest love or one of your biggest?
It's great. I think so with cycling, when you're out in Mallorca or you're out in the Alps and you're out in, it's like a different sport. I mean, if you could be out there all the time, it's amazing, and you have that sort of shared camaraderie with your mates. You can do a climb, you can, you know, hit each other for six, then stop at the cafe.
Have a laugh about it.
It's a bit more of a, I think that's the joy of it. I love the sort of the team aspect or the Whereas running, typically, if you were to race every time, you know, the same sort of order would happen. The best would be at the front. Whereas cycling, you can, you know, it's a bit different. I like that aspect of it. So
over the years, obviously, you've told me you use Zwift now. I mean, have you changed much about your training and much about the way you race on a bike now?
I think Zwift is and the online stuff has been a big game changer in you see it across the board. You see, like in lockdown especially, like with the COVID stuff, it gamifies training, so it just makes it so fun. And like in lockdown, we had this little amazing dream. We'd meet up every week and do the team time trial, where we'd have about eight of us meeting up, and we'd have some, you know, big hitters, professional triathletes and real strong riders. And it was the highlight of the week every week. And you're getting together and you're
competing against other
teams, but as together, so you're working really hard, you're hammering it. But it was like it was all on Discord with headsets on, we're like gamers, but just using your legs. And I really think you've seen it, and since like Zwift's come out, you're getting a lot. The bike fitness level's gone up significantly, because old school turboing, which I did as well, was like.
By the way, we're standing next to my very old school turbo here.
Old school. He's got a great example here. It's like looking at a wall, you know, just grinding without real any feedback other than pain. You know, which takes a lot more mental strength to really hurt yourself, whereas. Sometimes we're on the downside of Zwift, because you can push too hard. You can almost get too carried away. You get in there, you're I'm going to beat this guy up this hill, you know. The guy's irrelevant. You can almost get sucked into it a bit too much.
I'm guessing from what I know about you, you're probably quite good with accelerations. I bet you can race pretty well on Zwift.
And power to weight was always my strength. So Zwift definitely rewards power to weight quite a lot.
Do you want to pick two or three highlights? These could be cycles on their own, or it could be part of triathlons. Two or three of your best bike performances.
So I really enjoyed, I did the Hort route one year. That was a really cool event.
Was that in France?
The Hort route, they do basically, it's like a multi-day stage race for amateurs. And I think it's almost as sort of close as you can come to the Tour de France-esque for amateurs.
Mm.
But they just put on a really good event, where you tick off all the big climbs. And we put together like a team. Have you Felix Barker?
Yeah, I haven't had him on, but yes.
Felix, he was in the team. We put together a good team, and it was like every day, absolute, you know, smashing all these alpine climbs. And that was an incredible experience on the bike. I think most of my amazing bike memories are training camps as well, though.
Mm.
Like going out with your mates to Mallorca and just, you know, enjoying that. I won the Mallorcan long course weekend.
Oh yeah, that wasn't too long ago, was it?
I won that 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
And that was quite an interesting race, because it's a drafted bike.
Yeah. So this, for those who don't know, this is an Ironman triathlon over 3 days.
Ironman over 3 days.
So swim first day and then the bike, but it's draft legal.
It's completely draft legal. So you do the swim the first day, and then you get to feel for who you're racing, and you say, okay, who I'm up against. And the bike becomes so interesting because it's drafted. And you also have like there's people that are there just to do the bike. So there might be guys from the island of Mallorca that they might be just doing the bike. When you can identify that, oh, that guy's just doing the bike. You don't have to worry about him. You just have to worry about the other guys doing the whole thing.
But you could use them to
and
sit
you could
on
use them, exactly. Yeah. So you'd have attacks. But I knew with my running as my strength on the final day that if I could just get myself close enough, I could sort of execute on the last day.
Yeah.
And when it played to my strength quite well, that format of racing.
Did you do it in Wales as well?
I've done it in Wales, but I never did the full. We used to do it and then just do the half marathon, basically, because the Wales course is absolutely rock hard. It's brutal, even the half marathon. It had
Are
such
you listening
hills
to Mike
in it.
Bishop? Yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah. Well, the long course weekend, I think, had a harder run than the actual the Ironman marathon, but the Ironman course is pretty hard itself. But yeah, we used to, myself, Lucy Gossage, like James Gill, there's a few like that. We used to always go out and do those long, they're just great fun training weekends and experiences, I think. So
amazing.
That's a regular.
You've always trained quite a lot, haven't you, on the bike, I think, would you say?
Well, I don't think I'm a heavy trainer. I wouldn't say I'm a heavy trainer.
But you don't shy away from a long ride.
No. I like a good adventure or like a challenge. But yeah, I don't think I hold a massive volume every week, I'd say.
Right, okay. Yeah. And so let's just to give people an idea of who we're talking about here. Let's tell us your fastest Ironman bike split and your best time trial time, or whatever distance that you think is your best.
So my fastest Ironman time was Roth, where I did 8:58.
And the bike split was...
The bike split was actually... That was actually my... I didn't go very well there, bike split, because I borrowed someone's wheels. A good friend, I thought, a nice wheel upgrade. And at Roth, that you rack your bike and it slides into like a box rather than hanging it by the saddle.
Yeah.
And the morning of the race, I thought, you know, the roads out there are so immaculately smooth. I was like, oh, I'll put a little bit extra pressure in here because you can ride a whole height of pressure. Not realising that the extra pressure expanded my tyre out a little bit more. So when I got out the swim, I had a great swim, went to get on my bike. I didn't test the bike before.
Mm-hmm.
And the wheels expanded and they'd wedged in the aero cut out of the frame. So the wheels went, so I was faffing around for ages.
You have to let them down a bit.
Well, that would have been the sensible thing to do, Ben. Just let some air out your tyres. But what in my head, I was like, I've got Cervelo P2. I was like, if I just pull my rear wheel out and move the screws a little bit more... So I'm faffing around on this. I dropped so much time. And also you drop the pace lines and everything.
Yeah.
So I think I ended up riding 5 hours.
Right.
And it was a
still
race.
Still very respectable.
I really wanted to line up a sub-9.
Mm.
And I basically got off the bike and I had to run a 2:54 to go sub-9, which wasn't the game plan. I was expecting to have a much bigger buffer. And I think I probably lost 5 to 10 minutes on the bike.
Yeah.
Alone, of just auto pause on the side of the road, faffing with my tyre, and so I somehow ran a 2:52 in the Ironman.
Fantastic.
with £9.99 Decathlon shoes as well.
Nothing with Decathlon. I've heard the wetsuits are very good as well. if you want to sponsor us, Decathlon. And didn't you do a quicker time than that as well down in Weymouth?
I raced as a professional there. Because they paid to the top 10, and I thought, you know, there's a strong chance of getting the top 10. So I think, yeah, I did a faster time, but because the sea was so rough, they halved the swim.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was the most exciting swim I've ever done in my life. It was like proper, I'm actually quite amazed they let it go ahead. It was brutal, but it was quite, you know, your body surfing everywhere, and the you know, it was carnage in the water. But
I bet some people really suffered there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to say what time that would have been, because sometimes that little bit extra freshness you get from only half a swim, you know, you come back on the run and you pay it back. But I think my fastest bike had done, I think I did a 4:45 or so I just did Ironman Austria a couple of weeks ago, a few weeks ago, and I did 4:50 on the bike.
Nice.
It was a pretty tough bike course. Tougher than I was expecting, I think. Yeah.
Have you done any time trials recently since the advent of all this aero?
No, I haven't. No, I used to.
Because you said you're on a very good aero.
Yeah, I've got
bike
a really
time.
Good friend lending me a P5 of Di2 and MV wheels. And think so. I've got no excuses for kit, you know, and I haven't done a proper time trial on it. No, not since I sort of made my comeback to triathlon. So basically, I started back at triathlon this year, and the last few years I've just been running really through the COVID and a year or two before that. In fact, since my run streak,
let's mention that then. So you're now in what, 4 years? Did you say
four years of running every day, and I started at the start of August, so it was coming up to 4 years. And that started out because I felt like I was spinning. I felt like I was spinning the plates of triathlon and failing at all three. So I just felt like unfit and rubbish, and I just thought, right, let's gonna get just focus on running, get my running back, feel good about my running.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I'm gonna do a month of running every day, and like 30 minutes a day, of minimum. And the first, when you start it, I've learned so much from it actually, but I've never trained so consistently with my running. And like at start, you know, you get a little bit of Achilles pain. So I did a few on a treadmill and put the gradient up, and that sort of relieved that. But then after about a month or two, your body just gets so used to it. It just eats more. Its work capacity goes up so much more.
You get used to anything. It's crazy.
Yeah,
isn't it?
The tolerance of impact, it goes up and up and up. So you can just feed more and more and more.
Yeah.
And I think 1 month turned into two, and then you're like, okay, well, let's get to 100 days. All right, let's get to, you know, and it's just suddenly you hit a year. And you're like, oh, I've done a year of running every day. And then you're like, well, what do I do tomorrow? And as soon as you do 1 year and 1 day, then you're going for 2 years. And now I can't stop.
It's like this guy who's just done 102 Ironmans.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, what do you do?
You can't stop.
It's very, and there's definitely been days of the streak, which I, you know, have not been sensible to
run.
There
must have been days when you've been a bit ill.
Yeah, not many days. No. I had one or two. I think I ran with COVID. Yeah. COVID didn't really hit me that bad. It was just like a mild headache. I've had one or two of a headache, but haven't been ill that much with it. I've had the worst days. I did a crazy adventure with Gossage. That was pretty bad. And we basically cycled 100 miles off road in the pouring rain, having slept wild on the side of a mountain. And we set off at 9 in the morning and we didn't get to our destination at 9 at night. Completely soaked through, like every bit of you soaked through. Got to the B&B, only to have like fish and chips. Had some fish and chips because that was the only thing open.
Yeah.
And this was it up in Inverness near Loch Ness. And we basically get dry, put your stuff in the bin, and I had to go back out at like 10:30 at night to get my 30-minute run done, having been out all just feeling... You know,
that's proper dedication.
That was pretty mentally... I think I was quite close to maybe doing the full year or something like that. So I thought, I can't drop the ball here. I've had a few days like that. Like post another day, I did the Herod Relay.
And if that's the Peterborough to... Ely, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you did it on your own. It's normally a relay.
It's my first ultra run, because I've won every stage of the Herod Relay, and I thought that then I can do the next thing. The next logical step is to do all the stages together, and you get a handful of people every year do the full Herod Relay by themselves.
Yeah.
And I usually set them off an hour ahead of everybody.
Right.
But I was like, I don't want to go an hour ahead of everyone because I'll be running by myself all day and that'll be rubbish. I'd like to run with other people. But then the downside of running with other people is that you go a bit too fast. So they said yes, and they opened it to the whole ultra race and said, if you want to start with the main relay teams, that's fine. I think one other guy joined me.
Right.
And we started with the main relay teams. And I just went off. This is my first ever ultra. I don't really know how fast to run these things. And I just sort of ran at what felt comfortable pace. I think I went through the marathon in about 250-ish. Which, considering it's fairly off-road.
Yeah, I was going to say, the first bit's road, isn't it? Then after that, it's pretty much all off-road.
Yeah, and you're carrying a pack. And then, you're swapping out with the relay. The new guys are coming, you'd run with them. And then eventually, after about 50, 55K, my legs honestly felt like someone had hit them with hammers. And by the end of that, the doms I had the next day, trying to keep the running streak alive a day after that. That was like, it took a few kilometres to sort of warm them up. Yeah. So there's been some hard days. Like there's days like that where if you were coaching someone, you said, that's probably not sensible to run, Tom, that day. You're an idiot. Mm. But I think the positives from the run streak for me have outweighed the negatives.
Do you feel maybe, this is like throughout your athletic career, that maybe you haven't quite reached your full potential in one particular thing, like duathlon, triathlon or running, because you've been motivated by these other things and you like the idea of things, or you've had a run streak, or you fancy going for a 100-mile adventure or whatever.
It's interesting, I don't think there's many people that ever reach their potential. I think you're literally...
But there are some who are just focused on doing, say, 10-mile time trials or 5K runs, aren't there?
But, you have, your sort of your glass ceiling of, how good could you be at one thing? Mm. And for whatever reason, you can't get there, whether it's, time, whether it's injury whether it's, motivation. And I think, there's... Or maybe it's even, you're just barking at the wrong tree, you're just pushing in the wrong direction, or you've just not got the best advice. I definitely don't think I've probably maxed out what I could do.
What has been your strongest motivation, do you think, as you've gone through? What have you strived for the hardest, or what's got you your blood up the most?
I think this is why half of the run streak, because I find it quite hard to motivate hard training for more than a few months into an event. So I have
definitely agree. See it with, especially with Ironman build-ups, when they're too long. It's just
an Ironman build-up, I'd say is 16 weeks to really start to go in. And the last 8 weeks, absolutely crucial.
Mm.
And so mentally, I find I can. That's you know, after that, I find it hard to maintain that sort of. And maybe that's the difference between the very best guys who can maintain this sort of level of intensity a lot more. And I've seen that. The closest I think a person I've seen to get their like window has been Lucy Gossage, who I live with. So I get to see it firsthand. And I think when you're around those people and you end up pushing each other up and everyone sort of.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I first came across her when she was a good runner, but you wouldn't have said she was a world beater. And then, you know, within a few years, she's at the top of the Ironman professional
and I think ladder, isn't she? You have people, so like, I describe her like, you have like a workhorses and like a donkeys, I call them, a worker. And then you have like, I think I'm more of the racehorse. So I can run a sub 17 5 kilometers of almost no training, whereas Lucy has that capacity for work that just keeps on eating and eating and eating. And the workhorse tend to beat the racehorse eventually because it just trains herself to be so strong and durable. And her progression was incredible.
Yeah.
But I tend to operate. I will respond quite well off like smaller high intensity training, but I don't seem to have that capacity to eat as much as she eats in terms of workload.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you have a body type that responds obviously and quickly to quality.
I think that'd be fair.
That's interesting.
And then maybe if I could mentally and physically hold together, you know, training at 30 hours a week, then maybe I could be better. But
But you've done well, you know, you say you're more of a racehorse and you've done well at the shorter, relatively speaking, shorter run distances. So tell us your 5K PB.
So that's devastating. My 5K PB...
Is it 14.00?
No, it's 15.01. 15.01. Yeah. I really wanted to go sub 15 has been always one of my goals.
I'm sure you could do it.
I'm sure I could do it. 15.01. My half marathon...
You just need these 5 centimetre shoes.
My half marathon is 1 year, the Cambridge half, which I dipped. It was 107.57. And then my full marathon, again, I tried to have a shot at London this year, but I've never really done a proper straight... That was my first proper assault at a marathon.
Mm.
And my knee just gave out up to about 30K.
Same, yeah.
But I think in one of the long course weekends, which is obviously, you know, you've done 100 miles on the bike a day before, so you're not exactly fresh. I ran 2:31.
That's good going, isn't it? That's good going.
And I imagine 2:52. So that's another one. I want to get my marathon...
I mean, they're brilliant times, but knowing you, I'm sure
you
could do
better.
I remember going out for a run with Tom with my Italian friends, and we're just running along, and there's a railing there, and Tom just like hops over it. You ever thought of doing a steeplechase?
it is quite fun.
you've definitely got the potential. But yeah, as you say, you're 37, so coming up, so... Yeah, you've got to think. But you've decided to go long, you're telling me. So, in fact, as you've just mentioned, you've got a 100-mile birthday present of a race coming.
I'm slightly regretting it, Ben. I have to say, I think it's slightly... It's terrifying, in a way. I think I coach triathlon, and I always tell people, like, sometimes it's good to enter something that scares you. Because that becomes, like, if you're not scared by it or intimidated, at least...
You're probably not going to prepare properly.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. If I know, you know, if I've got to go and do the 5K and I've got to run 18 minutes, for me, I'd be like, well, I don't really need to do any training. I'll be fine. It doesn't have the pressure. Whereas this is intimidating to the point where I am genuinely worried if I'm going to finish it or not.
Do you get any support on the way?
I think there's an aid station every 10 miles and allow people to come and help you, but...
This is in the Peak District.
It's in the Peak District. It's got 5,000 metres of climbing. And it's going to go through the night. It starts at 7 in the morning. And I think it was one last year in about 21 or 22 hours. So, best case scenario, I'm finishing in the middle of the night, you know.
Yeah.
And that's if your body holds together. But
Have you wrecked the route at all?
I've wrecked a tiny bit of the route. And even that was brutal. I did about 1,000 metres of climbing in about 20K. And it And in sections where you're not running, you can't run. You've just got to hike up a hill. But I don't know.
Are you going to try and stay with people as long as possible?
I don't know. I would love to win it, but I don't know, would it be better almost to just stay with the others, with somebody else who knows what they're doing. And it's also like the fueling, I think.
What is that race? Tell us, so that if, because this will probably come out just before you do it. So.
The dark and light peak. I can't, something like that. So basically, my friend Lucy, she's entered the spine race next year because that's like completely bonkers. The spine race, for those who don't know, is the Pennine Way in one go. And they do a summer edition and they do a winter edition. And she's entered the winter edition of the spine race. So 265 miles in one go in the middle of winter through the, you know, over the mountains of the Peak District. And so this is a preparation race. And she was like, oh, why don't you do this? And a bit like, you know, you've watched like the films like the Barclay Marathons and those documentaries. And I've helped out at the Equinox race before, and you watch these 24-hour running races, and a bit of me has always been like, oh, but how would I approach this? How would I get on? Yeah. How would I test myself? And a bit of me is like, oh, I really don't want to do that. That looks brutal. Yeah. Anything with sleep deprivation, I'm like, oh, I'm not sure. I don't want to go further.
Exactly, because it's not just about speed. Hardly about speed at all, or even
it
muscle.
Literally, I think it's irrelevant.
Yeah, even muscle resistance. Really, yeah. It's about the mental side and about, you know, even hate to say it, you know, how your heart's going to cope with it and everything else.
Oh, I think,
you know, you've got to worry a bit about everything there, haven't you?
So this happened to fall on my birthday, this race, and I thought, I've always wanted to just have a go and test myself, and it's a bit different. I feel like when you're getting older in the sport, I see you sidestep into these more sort of adventurously, you know, it's something that's a bit more fresh and different, whereas Ironman's almost become a bit too samey, especially Ironman brand. It's like it tends to be four laps of 10k on the run.
Mm.
I don't know, it doesn't quite tickle the adventurous side as much, whereas this is something that's completely unknown. But yeah, I could be the fastest runner in the field by a long way in terms of 5k or 10k, but in this 100 mile race, I think that's largely irrelevant. It's can your muscles hold to the end? Can you mentally cope? Can you fuel it right? You know, there's so many different aspects.
Well, the other two episodes that are going to be coming up close to yours are both people who've done ultras. So let's hear your take.
Oh, I'll have to listen to those then.
But yeah, so we've got Dom, who's been doing these backyard ones.
Oh, they're nuts. Those people are proper mental in the head. That's like doing an ultra and then just having to start the race every
hour.
Every hour you've got to do 4 miles.
Yeah.
Absolutely bonkers. But equally, like, you watch the videos of it, you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think he might say doing 100 on the trot is equally
bad. You feel like you're going somewhere. No?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And we've got Charlie, who's done the Bob Graham round.
That was tough.
Just under 24 hours. So we're talking similar things in a way, aren't we? So, yeah, so tell us a bit about either for yourself or if you were coaching someone who was going to do an ultra event like this, what would be, say, your main tips for nutrition? Let's start with the lead up, fueling.
Ironman, you get into this a little bit. So Ironman, obviously, depending on how fast you go, you tend to go like all fully liquid diet with gels and now high carb drinks.
Because I remember you've done that before, haven't you? You've put like loads of gels into a bottle, haven't you?
20 gels in a bottle.
And that your guts withstood that.
I think it just about tolerates it for that sort of period of time. But you could, I think if you start to go a bit longer in the Ironman, so that if you're maybe over 13, 14 hours, then you might want to think about like a more physical food and a bit more normal food, because I think your gut stress gets...
Everyone's different, of course.
Yeah, everyone's different. You find what works for you. And nowadays, I think that one of the big changes has been like you've got these super high-carb drinks where you can now sort of tolerate, you know, it's not like you think one gram of carbohydrate per kilogram of body weight per hour. Well, now some people are getting near double,
really. Yeah. 140 grams per hour, whatever. And this is down to the combination of like sucrose, fructose and glucose, isn't it? And all these things, and these special starches,
But for this ultra, you're not really going at an intensity where you can burn carbs hard for that distance, because it's just so long. So I think... Like I tried we did a little recon, a little test event where we did the Welsh 3000s a few weeks ago, which is all the mountains around Snowdon that are over 3,000 feet. So it's a load of climbing and it's out all day. And I did things like I had a squeezy peanut butter. Mm-hmm. So you get, there's like 2,000 calories and a little squeezy peanut butter. I think so it's a like high fat, high bit of protein.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're a lot more that slower release.
Quite filling.
Normal
as well.
Foods is what I'm going for. Mm. And then your body starts to tell you what it wants. Like you start to crave salt and bits and bobs of that. I mean, there will be sugar and gels as like there as an emergency, but I think if you're trying to get more normal foods. And the fact that you've got a support team makes that, you know, a bit more able to take on.
And will you be having like pasta and rice fest in the days leading up?
I think that sort of died out a little bit. Yeah. Like, now it's probably moved to more simple rice and...
Yeah,
and
because of the less
bloating.
The old
classic pasta party and then just end up over bloated. But it'd be fairly simple. But I feel like you're going to be, in this event, you're going to go for a poo. The reason that is like, Ironman, you want to try and avoid going for a poo. You don't mind weeing, you can just wee yourself, that's fine. But you don't want to be stopping for the port lot. So you're trying to like drop down your fiber and your gut.
Mm.
But in this event, there's not, you know, it could be 24 hours. I think you're going so slowly that it's not going to make that much of a difference stopping for the toilet here and there. So I'd rather just have a bit more normal food that's not going to throw your gut right off. Because I think that, you know, your gut can sort of lock down and just go, right, we're not having any more of this crappy sugar. It won't take you. You start, I think it's quite common people vomiting and bits like that if their gut locks down on them.
Yeah, of course.
And so it's just keeping it fairly what you're used to.
And kit-wise, are you all sorted? You confident in your kit?
No, I'm not.
Everyone's talked about socks. Tell us about socks.
I've bought several pairs of different socks. I've got the little toe ones.
Yes, these are the ones that Dom was mentioning.
Is that what he's mentioning?
Yeah, toe socks. Yeah, what do you know the make?
I've no idea. Anyway, but I basically bought an array of different socks, thinking that I can change them during the race.
Yeah.
And I've also been spending money like it's, you know, on trainers, thinking, oh, I just don't know what, you know, what type of trainer. Historically, I've always ran in quite a minimalistic shoe.
Yeah.
So Ultra is a big brand I found really comfortable. Like I was zero drop, minimalistic shoe. I've always had, you know, feet that responded well to not needing much like padding on them. Or, you know, I used to train in racing flats back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, zero drop shoes. But for this type of length of race on your feet, I feel like I need a bit more maybe padding under there.
Mm.
And I've been just buying shoes and sending them back like willy-nilly, just like left, right and centre. Because also I like a really wide-fitting shoe. So it's not even a shoe I can go to a shop and try them on. They're quite niche. Like, so I've been buying lots of different shoes. And I think also having maybe options in the race is not a bad idea. If you start to get an issue in one place, I feel like I could switch out into a shoe that maybe won't be, you know, or rub it, you know.
Yeah, can you hide them somewhere? Put them at special needs station.
Well, I've got my team, my family. I think at this event they can come and meet them somewhere and change out shoes. But I don't know what I'm doing in terms of like, I've never raced it, so I don't have that experience of, oh, this worked well before.
It's a bit like whether to change your bike in a Tour de France time trial.
Yeah, yeah.
I took that to extreme once. We talked about Hereward Relay. I did just one leg of it and I actually ran.
Which leg are we talking? Nice, easy first leg?
No, I think it might have been the last leg. Or second last, but it was a real mixture of road and off-road.
Yeah.
And I had to, with elastic laces, I had a pair of spikes I just kept in my hands and just swapped over. Yeah, I don't think it was probably the best move, but
yeah,
it was muddy conditions.
It can get really muddy there.
You've got to take advantage of what you can, can't you? So if you can have a range of kit and some spare shorts and a spare top and all the rest of it.
I think just goal one would be making the finish in this race. I do want to try and win. Yeah. I feel like but I feel like there's a few things in ultras I think that can just go against you. Like it's dark, you're super fatigued, it's so easy to maybe turn an ankle or your body just to fail on you or like, you know, whatever. I feel like there's a DNF element that's almost, you know, almost out of your control, you know, or at least it more so than on the shorter events.
Sure, more can go wrong, All right, so as well as being a fantastic athlete, you've also done a fair bit of coaching now, as we both have. So I think it'd be good for the listeners maybe if we talk about some coaching tips for a runner, a triathlete maybe. To say someone's coming to you and they just want to improve their half marathon times. What sort of things do you find yourself having to repeat over and over again? And if you want to mention any specific cases or who you're coaching with, any of your own coaching and advertise yourself a bit.
So I started coaching, I did sports science university. And then after the back of that, I was like, well, what do I want to do with this? I did my coaching award and I did like personal training, strength conditioning, all that sort of stuff. But I worked with people like, you know, in PTing and that was more people losing weight. And I just really didn't enjoy the motivational goal of losing weight as a goal. I much preferred, I'm drawn to people that are like, oh, I'm doing this event and I want to make myself better for this event. So I just went at more and more of just like coaching people for triathlon. And it's always just grown organically, really. And now I coach about 20 people or so that are doing events. Mostly triathlons, a few pure runners, mostly triathlon and Ironman, because I think there's a lot to be gained if you're coming into the sport of triathlon, especially in the longer distances, even more so, where you can make mistakes, which will derail your race or not, you know.
Because in America, I think a very high percentage of people who do an Ironman triathlon will get themselves a coach, won't they? Much less so in England.
I think it's not like we can, the clubs, don't we?
But yeah, and you can find out so much on the internet now, but there's nothing that replaces a bit of individual attention, is there?
So some people want it for different reasons. I think you've got certain people need the knowledge, like put in front of them. Some people know what they need to do. It's just having someone on their shoulder just going, that keeps me honest and it keeps me on it, and it's a reflection point of like, should I do this? And it's just maybe some people, it's just taking that the whole stress away. It's just like they just want laid out and they don't have that stress.
And they follow to the letter.
So I just carried on doing that. But I also got into the kids coaching. So in Cambridge, we had a program that was run from the Cambridge Sports Lakes Trust, which is, for those who don't know, is basically the people that run Milton Country Park. And they historically had this kids program, which has been running for years and years and years. It must be 20 odd years. I think the British Triathlon found out about it, I think about 5 years ago or so. And they're like, this has happened. And they almost didn't know this had happened. And so we've had athletes that have come through that kids program. So it's typically primary school, but we did have a few secondary schools with Bottisham, I think Swavesey, Impington. You've had Pete, I think, just before me was maybe George Sweeney. She came through it. You've had Chris Darling. You've had him on the podcast. Yeah. He used to coach Chris at Bottisham. We've had a number of Tom Bridger, who's now doing really well. Do you know Tom Bridger?
No, he's
now GB, best in the country, steeplechase 3K. And again, all these. So we've had some amazing talent that's come through this program of kids, they experience the triathlon, but they might think, oh, I actually prefer biking or I actually prefer running. And so I've done that. And both together act quite well, because the coaching adults is quite serious and you're focusing on performance goals. And the coaching the kids is mainly just about having fun through the sport of triathlon. So it's always like, you know, fun running games. It's basically me playing my childhood running games with 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
It's like bulldogs and manhunts, but we do fun relays and bits and bobs like that. So that's basically my coaching background.
And I like
the contrast of the two.
That's great. Yeah. And so let's
advice wise.
Yeah, let's talk about the adults. Yeah.
So advice.
The adults, and I often find that people think they're doing a lot when really they're not. I'd say that's one of the things I find. I think people don't really understand about the need to vary intensity sometimes. And
I'd say also, the most common thing in running is running to just that grey area, running too fast but not fast enough. So they're neither running fast or slow, and they're just running at this intensity that's not helping them that well, but it's just injury risk goes up. So it tends to get all their slow runs much slower, and then building up and running, I find that you need to build up the capacity of mechanical tolerance, I call it. So it's getting them ready, which is a bit slower. In cycling, you can push someone a bit harder a bit sooner, but in running, their joints, their tendons and ligaments need to adapt to be able to tolerate the work capacity to get really good.
Yeah, you need frequency for that.
Frequency,
as well as
distance, so like I do a lot more little and often, but especially people who are coming into the sport, a lot more little and often is a lot better than like one or two big runs a week. I'd much rather someone do 20 minutes or 15 minutes every day than doing 1 hour 5:30 at the weekend and 1 hour in the week with a group.
Totally.
And then you can slowly build up that frequency, that little and often, and their body just gets a bit like the run streak. My body has got so used to running every day that a 30-minute run, it just doesn't even, like, it's like walking to the shops now. Whereas, like, you know, when you're first starting, a 30-minute run, you're going to be waking up the next day feeling a bit sore muscles. And you get to that point where your body, that it just becomes normal and it just consumes and it can eat more.
And then usually you become more efficient as well.
Yeah.
Which so you actually end up getting faster.
And reduce the injury risk. Like, I think the key, like with all coaching, is consistency. And by doing that little and often and getting people to run slower on their easy days, it's reducing the injury risk while building up this aerobic capacity and the mechanical tolerance. And then once their mechanical tolerance and the aerobic capacity is a bit built up, then you can start putting in the harder sessions and they're ready. This is what I do with someone who's fairly new to the sport, or someone that's been out of the sport for a while. So I've got a chap who I've been speaking to recently who I used to coach about 5 years ago. Mm. And now he's coming back and it's like, oh, I need to rebuild. I've done nothing for 5 years.
Yeah, you can't go straight back where you were. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's probably the biggest pointers to people.
Yeah.
Getting in.
And what? Let's go to triathlon now. What do you think you might be telling triathletes now that we wouldn't have done, or I certainly wouldn't have done, and you might not have done, when we were getting good, when we were starting to get good?
I suppose what's
apart from the Zwift and the technology on the
bike? I think it depends. In triathlon, you get, if you're in it to complete it, or like, you know, you're seeing your Ironman as a challenge, and your primary goal, I always try and tell people, is to complete it in a time that makes you, like, you know, proud of your performance. For some people, that is just completing the race. And some people, it might be, you know, 12 hours or 10 hours, or whatever it may be. Yeah. I think one of the big difference in triathlon, if you're going faster, is aero has just become, like, so... you know, when I first did triathlon, I think with Lucy, and it was almost like that was the last sort of era of aero didn't matter that much. And I think there's a few people, well, not matter that much. There's a few people in that era, the professionals, which were classed as Uber bikers, which actually were just early to cotton on to how important aero was. And then everyone caught up with them, and they weren't no longer Uber bikers because of the aero. And the gains have been just insane. And I think you've seen it in the elite, or like amateur elite stuff in the age group. The speeds have just got so much faster on the bike. And it's all the bike from just the aero tinkering and...
two things about that. One, I totally agree with you. I was just chatting to a guy called James Teagle, who I'm hoping to get and he's saying it's like an arms race.
Oh yeah,
it's that bad that, you know, everyone's trying to get these extra gains, and it does make amazing differences.
The downside is it's really expensive.
And the other thing that I think it does show, which is surprising in a way, is how amazing some of the performances were when people were not aero at all. I mean, you know, I'm not one of these ones who harps on about Dave Scott and Mark Allen, but to think they rode that fast with the most unaero position and everything, that, you know, it's incredible, really.
But then I think, well, with the professional ones, I think some of those performances have asterisks. And they used to have this at Roth.
The vehicles. Yeah, there is.
So that. I think this is, like, you see that the more people have come attuned to the how important aero is, and the more the sport's got more popular. So you have, like, you know, you see it in races, the pace lines and stuff, and you realise, well, hang on. If I'm behind a motorbike at 50 metres, which is miles down the road, I'm getting benefit. And I think back in their day, they didn't quite realise how much of an impact those lead vehicles were having on the front of the field. So it's basically get out of the water and go hard as nails off the bike to get the lead vehicle. And I think there's a lot of these sort of world record performances, in my eyes, have got big asterisks on them because they've just been towed around on a bike.
Yeah.
And that's
carried on until very recently.
You're super fast from the speed of the vehicle, and you're fresher because the bike's or lead car has dragged you around. I mean, so I think it's hard to say.
Yeah. So let's say we want to give people three aero tips. Let's say they've already got a time trial, a triathlon specific bike.
Yeah.
They've already got a disc wheel. And they've got a tight fitting tricycle. Let's give three extra tips that maybe we've become aware of in the last.
Well, I think
years.
Your position is the most important thing. And a lot of that is working out how to get your head out the wind.
Without
still being able to see forwards, because
that safety is the main thing.
I mean, I joke, like I had an ex-girlfriend. In fact, the girlfriend who I originally got into the sport with, the swimmer, she ended up, she lived in Singapore and she had a boyfriend out there. And, you know, and I still was good friends with her. And this guy was practicing out in Singapore, time trialing. He got into the sport. You know, he wasn't super fast, but he was getting faster and faster. He ended up dying because he was head down looking at his speedometer and rode into the back of a stationary vehicle. It is important to still be able to look where you're going, but equally, you know, getting your head out the wind is one of the things that makes you the fastest.
So with people you coach, I mean, you can obviously pay thousands and go to Matt Bottrell and get yourself tested, or you can do that. I can't remember if it was Mike Hutchinson or someone, was you just used to draw an outline on a mirror and try and get...
But that's not a bad, rough gauge,
yeah, yeah, or take a photo and do
rough
it that way.
Rough gauge and working out how many... I think that's quite a nice way, or doing it like doing a local circuit that works for you and then just changing and...
Changing little things and seeing what effect it has by riding at the same power or heart rate or effort. Yeah, interesting.
The aero change has been very significant. And then I think the other, you know, the big change has been the online Zwifting and the online training on the turbos. That has been like quite game changing. Like now I can set a program for someone. I can set a workout and it automatically loads up to their session onto a Zwift and they can just ride it, and you don't have to it will just adjust the watts to where it needs to be, and you just have to take it.
Yeah.
So if you're feeling slightly less motivated, it just feeds it to you and you just gotta your choice is either to pedal or get off the bike, you know.
So that's great.
All that, and there've been big changes in the bike world.
I mean, you've always struck me as someone who's had fun on your bike and training generally, and you've got you've mentioned Lucy Gossage, but you've also got loads of other people in Cambridge that you train with, that I see you've ridden with on Strava and that. Just chatting beforehand, we mentioned Adam Tapley, and maybe there are a few others. Do you want to give us maybe an idea of what your bike training in Cambridge is like, and some of the fun rides that you go on? And you can be quite specific and local in what you refer to, if you like.
So I suppose historically it's always been the chain gang. It's always been one of the funnest events.
Is this the Tuesday night one?
Yeah, I used to do it a lot, so I haven't done it maybe for a good few years. So I moved up to Loughborough, which is an incredible spot for triathlon, but... Yeah, that used to be like the fun week of, and there'd be many a chain gang which I'd come back from. Your legs are twitching. You're you can't sleep at night because you've just absolutely battered yourself around at 7 o'clock at night. That was always a great one. But then we just have a good group of mates, and you tend to meet up on a Sunday and go out. And then there's always always keep it quite fun. You're always sprinting for a sign here and there.
Hammering each other on the climbs. That's
some of my fondest memories are absolutely just battering my mate, or hitting each other on mountains, or whatever it would be. That's just great fun. It's a weird one, isn't it? It's when there's a great enjoyment and of making. I don't know. It's quite sadistic. But if you're hurting, but someone else is hurting more, your pain doesn't really feel that painful, does it?
I agree.
So if you're riding up a climb it's the very worst is if you're hurting the most and you're the one hanging on the back and you're just getting a kicking. But if you're that's what with your mates, that's what it's all about.
Definitely.
It doesn't feel like pain if you're hurting someone else as well.
Do you want to name check anyone who's given you a beating or you've given a beating?
Many. I mean, I used to blow up. We used to do probably one of my when I was. Coming up in Cambridge, we'd go for rides, and I used to bonk all the time. And when I say bonk, it's like you've gone hypoglycemic, and you've literally got no carbohydrate left in you. And you can, your vision starts going blurry, you get tunnel vision. Like, I've had so many occasions when it's because I've just not been paying attention. You're having fun, you have not been eating properly, or I've just been riding too hard for what your ability level is. And I remember once I had to get picked up from home from Fulbourne to Bottisham by my mum. And I was like, I can't get over Fulbourne Hill. I'm literally laying on the floor unconscious almost. You're like, but I used to be religious. Yeah, and Gossage used to, because she was always so good at endurance. She'd ride, and she'd come into her own on a 100-mile ride in that last sort of 25. All the boys would be smashing the front, and then she'd come alive in the last 25, and we'd just hit ourselves for six, and she'd come along. Yeah, there's many a ride I've completely blown my doors off, and we used to go down and do the tour of Wessex a lot. That was a good one. And what else are we? Yeah, those sort of hard, long rides. But I've come to learn a bit more about nutrition.
Yeah, it doesn't happen quite so often.
Yeah.
So you mentioned you just did Ironman Austria recently. Can you give us an idea of like how a typical training week would look like in the lead up to that, when you're at the peak? Like, well, obviously, you're running every day.
Yeah, still running. Yeah, I'm running every day. And I experimented with something, and it worked okay for me, which was swimming once a week. So I did once a week swimming Ironman distance, basically Ironman intensity, for that last like little block, and that seemed to get me enough.
In one go, broken up?
In one go, one swim a week. So that was my minimum. I think your minimum criteria, I tend to look at the event and work backwards and go, well, what do I need to do? I need to be comfortable, be able to ride 100 miles or 180 kilometres. My issue with Austria is that after London Marathon, my knee niggled. It took a while for it to go what it did to it, and that I couldn't quite get the running volume I want, or the bigger, harder runs, until about 3 weeks out. I didn't feel like my knee was ready to take anything. So I was just going out riding with a mate a couple of times a week, trying to get like 100 miles in almost, or a big like 100k plus rides.
Right, right.
So getting strong back on the bike, because if you're not strong on the bike, it doesn't matter how fast you're on the run, you're gonna find a hard time. So
exactly.
The most important bit in an Ironman is the bike, pretty much. You know, the swim is, you're fresh, or even if you're not super fit, you're pretty fresh and it's not too bad. The bike is like, it sets up the whole race. It sets up the run if you with the fitness, and also it's the biggest bulk of the race. So I'm spending most of my time on that. Yeah, out on the bike, 100-mile rides. I like a cafe stop as well.
Yeah, don't we all. Unfortunately, we're starting to run out of time, so I just want to get my last few questions in. First of all, I want to know, I'll ask all three of them, then you can answer me any order you like. I want to know what your achievement is you're most proud of in your career. And I want to know your favourite training session, whatever discipline you want it to be. And we always ask your favourite pre-race meal, or just meal in general. You got 2 minutes, go.
I've got 2 minutes. All right. So my favourite training session, my most proud moment.
And the favourite meal. That's probably the easiest one.
Meal, I mean, now I started doing like the boring white rice and fish and white rice and chicken. But I think some of my best races have been off like pizzas and, you know.
It's funny you weren't the first to mention that, yeah.
Yeah. So it seems like it's trying to, that'd be my favourite, and what's optimal are probably two different things.
Yeah, of course.
I love a good steak. But it's not ideal to have before
night. Some of us vegetarian.
I love a good steak fully up there. But my most proud performance, my rough one was, I think, my most proud, even though I felt like, you know, the race went against me and I had the mechanical issues, and the fact that I still achieved my goal despite it not being the most optimal race, and I had to really just pull out this... For me, I didn't think I could go that fast on the run, and everything stick. And for everything to stick in an Ironman is quite rare. I think there's more Ironmans than not that, you know, you fall apart a bit on the run, or there's, you know, something goes slightly
hard to have a perfect day, isn't it?
So really, I think that is my most proud, because I overcame adversary as well as doing like my fastest performance.
Mm.
And my favourite training session, I think I'm a social trainer. I find it very hard to train by myself. So for me, the best session is like getting a group of guys together, or guys and girls together, and having a bike ride, which is like through and off, you're taking turns. And I need people to train with. So basically, when I'm doing an Ironman, I'm tapping up all my friends who basically don't have jobs, or, you know, have jobs that are off in the week. I'm like, right, who can I ride with in the week? Because I find it very hard to do 100 miles by myself.
Yeah.
I I'm just listening to podcasts non-stop, and the intensity is not there. I need that sort of competitive element.
Some people definitely need that. Yeah.
So for me, yeah.
So group.
Sunny bike. The trouble is bike ride. Like if it's wet out there, it's horrible. You know, it's wet and miserable. Whereas if you get a lovely day on the bike ride, a bit of through and off, you know, a bit of make it hard. Good cafe stop. You can't beat that.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, Tom. Just very quickly, and if people want to get in touch with you, either for coaching or to go for a bike ride because they don't work. No, I'm joking. Well, yeah, just generally, are you present on social media?
Yeah,
or Strava?
I suppose Strava is probably my most used social media. So Strava, or anywhere if you just search me up. Strava. I mean, I don't really use Facebook that much more. You can contact me on that or wherever, Instagram occasionally.
And if you see someone running around Cambridge, it's probably Tom at the moment, as he does it every day. Yeah, have we missed anything? Have I forgotten anything?
No, I think that's it. Yeah, you've probably Fantastic. Covered most things.
Well, maybe you can come back and tell us about this 100 miles.
I just hope I finished, to be honest.
Yeah. It's been brilliant chatting to you, Tom. Thanks ever so much. And we're going to go for a little run now, which will feel like just going to the shops for Tom. Well, I hope you enjoyed that chat with Tom Vickery. He's great fun, and I really want to have him back maybe to chat about some other stuff. There's so much to talk about with Tom. Let's hope he does well in his 100-mile race this weekend. If you've got any comments, if you want to get in touch, just look at the episode notes. It's all listed down there. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Subscribe and rate. And just help in some way. Let us know you're out there. It'd be great to hear from you in whatever way. In the meantime, keep enduring.